south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, today we're on a remote in a faraway place. So we're not using the usual nice mic setup, so this might sound a little tinny today. Let's see how it goes. All right, first I'd like to read this article that's entitled, When Justice Was Swift and Merciless in Latin America. I just thought this might be appropriate since people are talking about President Bukele in El Salvador being such a harsh taskmaster. I'm talking about first world people who whine and complain about it. People who have never been to El Salvador. Those shit-for-brainers who have no boots on the ground at all. You know the type. Those whining know-it-alls who want Bukele to fail. That said, I'd like to read this, and maybe you can let this sink in when thinking about El Salvador and the way Bukele is treating those gang members he's imprisoned. You've heard those stories about the inhumane treatment those gangbangers are getting in prison, according to all those whiny, teary-eyed NGOs, who, by the way, kept their mouths shut and did no boots on the ground when the gangs were in control, huh? But suddenly now they're all over the media getting their 2 cents in, right? Because now they can open their mouths, because they're in no danger of getting whacked like they would have been if they'd opened their mouths way back when the gangs were in control. Anyway, I think you'll like this article. At least it'll give you a different perspective. It's called When Justice Was Swift and Merciless in Latin America. And as usual, I'll paraphrase this a bit and cut out the boring parts. It says, on September 8, 1783, Cuenca, Ecuador resident Melchor de Valle was convicted by the Spanish royal court of murdering his brother, Sylvester. The sentence? 200 lashes in the public square, then hanging on the gallows until death. The court further ordered that when the body was removed from the gallows, it was to be stuffed into a leather bag, along with a dog, a rooster, a snake, and a monkey. The bag to be then sewn shut and thrown into the Rio Tomabamba. But that's not all. The court order continued, and we have proof of that. We've got the actual record. It stated unequivocally, if anyone retrieves the bag from the river, he will receive 200 lashes. That's if he's a commoner. Or be fined 100 pesos if he's a nobleman. Then it says, Cuenca's Spanish governor, Jose Antonio Vallejo, who was a naval captain before his assignment in Ecuador, was a man dedicated to seeing criminals punished to the full extent of the law. So, as part of his duty, he ordered hanging towers erected in 3 Cuenca neighborhoods, Todos Santos, San Sebastian, and El Vecino. The one in El Vecino still stands. You can go look at it. It's outfitted with 4 concrete hanging pegs, below an obelisk topped with the Lion of Castile. According to the Spanish chronicler Marquez Gonzalez Suarez, Vallejo often attended the hangings personally and did the lashings in person. He's also credited with introducing the popular Spanish pastime of cat roasting. Yeah, you heard right, cat roasting. The governor encouraged families to come to the Central Plaza, now Parque Calderon, located in Cuenca, Ecuador. This spectacle was carried out every Sunday night, where cats in wire mesh cages were slowly lowered and roasted in a bonfire. According to Gonzalez Suarez, the chronicler, the caterwauling, that's what they call it, right? Caterwauling? And writhing of the burning felines always delighted and amused the spectators. It was always a big event attended by many. So that's where that word comes from, huh? Caterwauling. A new word to come out of the old tradition of a Sunday night cat fry. Just a little aside here. Do you like cats? I have an old expat friend, Oscar. In fact, he's our crypto Bitcoin buddy, Oscar Miner. He's an absolute cat lover. Some would say he's got 1 too many cats, maybe 2 or 3 or 5 too many cats. But then again, who's to say how many cats are too many? Suffice it to say, there are no rats within a couple of miles of his gated, guarded community. So I think at this point he's no longer listening. He turned off the podcast. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, then the article goes on to say, according to Spanish records, those found guilty of murder, theft, adultery, or insulting the Spanish crown were marched to the gallows in humiliation robes. If you're wondering what a humiliation robe is, it's a robe that's smeared in calf's blood. It goes on to say, following the expulsion of the Spanish from Ecuador in 1822, hangings gave way to death by firing squad, but executions continued to be public spectacles and widely attended. You gotta wonder, is that a bad thing? Public executions? Before Netflix, you had to do something on a Sunday afternoon. Either go to church, get drunk, or attend a public execution. Or a cat fry. Maybe all of the above. Then it says there are records of all public executions in Ecuador. For example, in 1857, Tiburcito Lucero was found guilty of murdering a prominent pig farmer. He was ordered shot in San Francisco Plaza. The condemned man was ushered into the plaza wearing one of those bloody robes, a death robe. He was placed on a raised wooden platform and summarily shot, as were all public executions by tradition. Oh, and here's a part you might like. It says the public executions were accompanied by a legal order that wives and children witness the deaths of their husbands and fathers. Though some thought that cruel and unusual punishment for the family. After all, it wasn't the family that committed the crime. Cuenca poet Dolores Ventimiglia de Galindo, considered a radical reformer in her day, objected to the children being forced to watch their fathers die. She posted flyers around town, encouraging citizens to speak out against what she called cruel and barbaric rituals. But to no avail. It was not until about 50 years later, until Elroy Alfaro's liberal revolution of 1897, that the death penalty was finally eliminated in Ecuador. Haha, but the story doesn't end there. In a strange twist of circumstances, the last official execution recorded in Cuenca was that of Vargas Luis Torres, convicted of attempting an armed rebellion in 1896. He was shot in Calle Sucre in front of what today is the municipal building. El Muni, that's what they call all municipal buildings in Latin America. El Muni, Muni. Court documents show, this is 1896, remember, that the neighborhood dogs came by to lick the blood off the cobblestones after the body had been carted away. And the neighbors and the onlookers just let it happen. The dogs were not shushed away. Again, normal procedure for the time. Now remember, in 1897, there was a guy named Eloy Alfaro. He had a liberal revolution to remove the death penalty. Remember that? Well, as they say, no good deed goes unpunished. Turns out, he was thanked for his efforts a few years later in 1912 by a mob led by two Catholic priests. His method of rule did not sit well with them or the townspeople. The mob shot him, tied him up, and his body was dragged in ropes through the streets of Quito, Ecuador, his arms and legs severed along the way. What was left of him was thrown into a fire at the end of the procession. Anyway, the article continues, public punishment in Latin America in general continued to be a central element of justice, and in Ecuador continued that way until the second decade of the 20th century. It says all the way up till about 1950, petty criminals were often tied to humiliation crosses at entrances to the city. I can see that making a comeback. What do you think? Humiliation crosses, I like that. Back then, in Cuenca, Ecuador anyway, until around 1950, criminals were tied up on a street corner for public scrutiny for up to 2 days, so that citizens with grudges against the offenders could show up to apply their own personal versions of justice, generally with fists, whips, sticks, and rocks. If you committed a crime and were justly convicted, all of that was permitted. Now, you might say, how could that be? Latin Americans are very religious people. They believe in the Bible. And though Jesus said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone, turn the other cheek," and all that. But even in the Bible, there was a difference of opinion. If you believe more in the Old Testament, remember, it was all about an eye for an eye. Anyway, fast forward to today, 21st century. You can still see some of those marble humiliation crosses all throughout Latin America, especially in Cuenca, Ecuador. One in particular is very large and still stands in front of the Iglesia San Sebastian at the corner of Simon Boulevard and Calle Coronel Talbot. By the way, you longtime listeners to this show, The Expat Files Living in Latin America, you've heard me report that in quite a few towns out in the boonies, especially where there's a large indigenous population, they still use those humiliation techniques in the town square when they catch a petty thief or criminal. So now let's think about what's happening in El Salvador right now. With 70,000 gangbangers with gang tats on their faces and necks stuck in prison, and those wimpy NGO do-gooders whining about it in the first world media and press. The thing is, if you've never worked or hung out in El Salvador, you can't imagine how idiotic that sounds. What a gross misrepresentation of the past versus what the present is like now over there. I know I've mentioned and even harped on this theme a few times in past shows, but all it really takes to set your mind straight on this is to talk to someone who's lived in El Salvador, or someone from El Salvador who's living up in the States now because he escaped all that. That being the pre-Bukele era. In fact, I recently got an email from Antonio, who is from El Salvador and is living there right now. He's an IT guy who left for a few years during the pre-Bukele era when the gangs were in control, and now he's back because he sees a drastic change, a new era. He sees his home country's got fantastic possibilities, and he wants to be in on it. He says, Johnny, I just read another hit journalistic piece against my country, El Salvador. The so-called reporter from the AP, a journalist named Salvador Mendeles, he doesn't write for Salvadorians. He writes for the international community with the hope to gain support to remove President Bukele. He says guys like that don't write for 97% of the Salvadorians that support the government. Those so-called first rule reporters that diss Bukele are nothing but political activists connected to or working for the old corrupt oligarchs. What most people don't know is that when those old oligarchs saw Bukele really meant business, they took themselves and their resources out of the country, and a lot of them are living in the United States now, mostly in LA and Miami, just biding their time waiting for something bad to happen to Bukele so they can go back in. Who do you think's financing those first world journalists who are saying bad things about Bukele? Meanwhile, he says in his email, the first world media seems to talk a lot about so-called criticism of Bukele's government that they say originates from down in El Salvador. I ask, whose criticism? Those whiny, cowardly, wimpy human rights groups who are afraid to come down to El Salvador to help out or criticize when the gangs ran the place? And now that it's all cleaned up, they come down and have the balls to criticize it? It's certainly not the people of El Salvador who are doing the criticizing. Not when a president has 90%+ approval rating in his own country. The only people criticizing are foreign entities afraid of the example he sets and the old corrupt politicians, their families, and their friends, along with the gang members who are all in prison. If you add those elements up, the old regime members, their families, and the gangbangers, you'll find that's about 5-10% of the population. What a coincidence, just about exactly the number of people, about 10%, who disapprove of President Bukele. Think about it, that means everyone who's not a criminal or a corrupt political piece of shit approves of President Bukele. Isn't it funny how that works out? Then Alfredo says, I live and work here in El Salvador in the IT business. And for the first time I can drive and walk anywhere, including at night, without worrying about getting killed, assaulted, or extorted by gangbangers. He says, over the years before Bukele, I lost 11 close friends, including one who was a mother with a 5-year-old daughter, both getting shot in the head by gang members. And after hearing what First World Media is saying about Bukele, how they diss him, I don't blame the Salvadorian people for starting to have real hatred for the international press and media. By the way, he says, I would bet that no crack will ever be found in Bukele's White House. He says it seems First World Media doesn't like the fact that El Salvador won and the gangs lost. Alfredo says the woke's attempts failed in El Salvador. Probably, he says, because there are no woke people in Salvador except the occasional First World gringo or gringa tourist. All right, me Johnny here, wow. I like it. I'm with you all the way, Alfredo. Or is it Antonio? Oh, well, doesn't matter. I like it either way. All right, moving on. You know, we're always talking about mañana time and how in Latin America things are way behind, sometimes years behind, you know, lag time with innovations and progress and fads that happen up in the first world, well before they ever hit down here in Latin America. Well, then, how about artificial intelligence? When is that going to get to Latin America? Well, it's hit already because there's some astute IT guys who've discovered just how gullible Latin Americans can be. All you have to do is watch how they use their smartphones, and you can see just how gullible they really are. Of course, some of us gringos are pretty gullible, too. But what I mean is, I see Latinos do things online I would never do. The way they give out their personal information, their emails. I've even seen so-called intelligent Latino friends of mine give out their email passwords online. You know, sometimes a website's offering something for free, like a report or a Happy Meal or something, and says, just give me your email. And after that, it says, give me your password, or clave in Spanish, clave, the key. And you know, you never want to do that, but Latinos do it routinely. I can't believe it. I can't believe how they fall for that stuff. So naturally, there are certain smart Latino no-goodniks, IT guys who know about artificial intelligence. Well, they're utilizing AI to rob people, to extort people. Listen to this. This article just came hot off the presses from Peru. You know, we don't talk too much about Peru because I don't recommend it too much at all as an expat destination, a Plan B destination. But let's talk about it right now since this article focuses on what's happening in Peru. Though this is happening in most every Latin country, this article particularly focuses on Peru because the crimes are ongoing and the data is coming in. The title of this article, and I'll translate it into English best I can, fraud groups using artificial intelligence perpetuate online scams in Peru. It starts out by saying fraudsters are targeting Peruvians using deepfake voice imitation. Criminal actors are using artificial intelligence to carry out sophisticated scams. It goes on to say, according to an investigation by Peruvian news outlet El Comercio, there have been at least 55 instances of criminals using artificial intelligence to create audio deepfakes or impersonations of an individual's voice to commit fraud and extortion in Peru, this over the last 3 months. And those are only the cases that have been reported. Given that AI technology is very new, it's unknown how much fraud there really is. Get this, it says the El Comercio news site says criminals are now taking short audio recordings of a target's voice, which they download easily from YouTube, Instagram, and WhatsApp especially, and feed these audio bits into deepfake software AI to produce realistic voice copies that can be programmed to say anything. The investigation said that criminals using this AI technique use these audio deepfakes to extract ransoms for faked kidnappings after making friends and relatives believe that one of their loved ones who's traveling on vacation or who has not been home for a while, or who is supposedly on a business trip. The criminals use a recreated piece of that person's voice in a panic mode to give the impression that person has been kidnapped or is in danger. One version of the scam uses a recording to simply impersonate someone to ask for money from acquaintances, friends, or relatives who believe they are talking to the real person. Since the AI faked voice is indistinguishable from the real thing. Then it says, the growth of audio deepfake scams like this is not solely a Peruvian phenomenon. It's happening throughout Latin America and the First World, too. But those fake AI scams do not stop there. Criminals are now using AI, artificial intelligence, to create false documents and carry out disinformation campaigns against their enemies. It says these AI impersonation scams are highly profitable. For instance, in Argentina, just this year, police captured a leader of a gang that stole $600,000 in just 10 days through a series of impersonation scams, just as mentioned. Then it says, just this year, criminals stole $1.5 million from a mining company in Chile by impersonating the CEO and convincing employees to transfer the funds. They got away with it. They were never caught. It says the organized groups behind the scams use artificial intelligence to create the scripts. They simply ask AI what would be the best strategies to extort or steal money from a certain group or individual. They use the latest versions of OpenAI, ChatGPT 3, 4, and 5. So how accurate is it? It would be like asking an Einstein-level criminal to develop individually targeted extortion scams.
Wow.
On top of that, it says AI can falsify evidence, create fraudulent documents, and spread disinformation on demand, all of which could be and will be used by criminals to evade prosecution. And of course, the smart criminals are always one or two steps ahead of sluggish authorities. It's easier for criminals to access the latest free AI packages like ChatGPT 3.5, 4, etc., etc., than it is for a government agency or employee to go through the lengthy procurement process to get their own AI systems going. That leaves a huge gap in time, which is always in the criminal's favor. So then what can us gringos and expats learn from this? Well, the thing is, all of us gringos and expats and people traveling in foreign countries have to be on the lookout. I can think of lots of scenarios where the bad guys target our relatives and friends back home because, hell, as far as those relatives and friends back home, they aren't keeping tabs on us. They don't know where we are or who we're with. So let's just say you talk a lot on your phone, especially WhatsApp. You make lots of little recordings and send them to your friends and relatives everywhere. And some IT bad guys hack into WhatsApp and get all those recordings. They get AI to make a panic voice recording of you and send it to your contacts up in the States or Canada or Europe, whatever. They say they're holding you somewhere. They want money. They want a wire transfer or some crypto. Why wouldn't a friend or family member think it's true? After all, it's in your voice. So how can you avoid that scenario? Well, it ain't easy if you've been using WhatsApp or any of the other voice over internet protocols. That's why I always recommend using the Signal app, because no one I know of yet has been able to hack into that one. Problem is, all of us have our voices out there in the ether, right? And as for me, well, even if I don't use WhatsApp and make recordings of myself, I've got 1,000+ expat files, living in Latin America, podcast shows out there. Any no good Nick can download those and modify them with AI. Yes, it is scary. Anyone who speaks on the internet, uses their voice in any way, shape, or manner, can be a victim. So what can you do? Well, I say tell your friends and relatives up north that there are lots of scams out there, and the ones using artificial intelligence really convincing. So if they ever do get a panicked call saying you're in danger, send money, just try checking in the usual way by email or Signal app to see if it's BS or not. But here's the thing. You see, I've been down here 30 plus years now, and I don't know of a single person that's been kidnapped and or held for ransom or extorted. So far, the only time I've ever seen or heard about it is in a movie plot. It's not that it can't happen in real life, but it's just so improbable. I mean, look, if it's never happened to anyone I've known here in Latin America, and with all the people I've known over 30 plus years, I'd say if you do get such a call, the very first thing you should think is that it probably is an AI scam. All right, moving on. You know, undoubtedly, the dirtiest, most unsanitary restaurants I've ever seen here in Latin America are Chinese restaurants. Hate to say it, but it's true. In fact, early on, many years ago when I first came down, I was so surprised to see so many dumpy Chinese restaurants. I couldn't believe it. Seems like every block or two there was a Chinese hole-in-the-wall restaurant, and man, they were hole-in-the-walls. And as for me, I don't mind Chinese food if it's decent, but I went into a few of those places, and like I always do, I go to the bathroom first, and in most every case, either the water in the sink wasn't working, very bad sign, or there were no towels, paper towels, at all. Very bad sign, meaning the cooks in the kitchen probably never washed up much either. And sometimes there'd be no paper towels, but there would be a regular cloth towel, which is worst of all because, man, that'd be the best place in the world for bacteria to live and multiply, right? A moist cotton towel sitting out there for everyone to use, yuck. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say this 1,000 times before, but if you have a restaurant anywhere in Latin America, you're on your honor to keep the place clean and tidy. Because although government inspection teams exist here in Latin America, they're so very spotty, and sometimes they don't come around to your place for years. However, once in a while, there's some public outrage because a particular restaurant has way too many cases of Montezuma's Revenge, with some clients even ending up in the hospital. And that kind of story can end up in the news. When that happens, the inspection department sometimes gets into gear and starts inspecting. like it should. By the way, down here in Latin America, it's not like the health inspection departments don't inspect at all. They do when you first open. They always come in and have a look around, but when you first open, things are clean, spick and span. New equipment, refrigerators, stoves and stuff. New sinks, new lighting, new dispensers in the bathroom, sometimes new floors, places painted. That's why almost all new restaurants get a clean bill of health when they first open. And they get a little certificate-like diploma to prove it. And they post that up on the wall behind the cash register. It's called a certificado sanitario, a sanitation certificate. And that's usually the end of the inspection cycle. They may never come back again. Unless, as mentioned, too many cases of Montezuma's revenge or hospitalizations. So then why am I bringing this up? Because, guess what? Just such an inspection crackdown happened in Ecuador this week. There's a headline in the news of El Mercurio newspaper that says, get this. In July of 2023, Ecuador health inspectors got a bug up their ass and decided to inspect more than a few restaurants, which is their job. So they went all out and inspected 230 restaurants. 48 of the 230 restaurants failed due to unsanitary conditions and violation of protocols in the handling and preparation of food. Now, get this. Here's the part to pay attention to. 24 of the 48 restaurants, that's about half, right, were Chinese restaurants. So half of all the restaurants closed for unsanitary conditions and violation of protocols in the handling and preparation of food were Chinese restaurants. So let that be a lesson to you. Now, why do you think when you're in Latin America anyway, when you poke your head into a Chinese restaurant, you see so many backpackers, people with rucksacks and mochilas? Because backpackers are on extreme budgets, and when they first get into town, any town in Latin America, the first thing they ask each other is, where are the cheapest eats? Never fails that they almost always turn out to be Chinese restaurants. Now, that's not to say there aren't a few upscale Chinese restaurants in any city. In fact, I think you probably know of P.F. Chang. It's a Chinese chain restaurant. You see them down here in Latin America and the big cities, too. They're one of the higher-priced Chinese chain restaurants, and you get what you pay for, right? So, naturally, you'll be all right eating there, if you like Americanized Chinese food, that is. But we're talking about those filthy little mom-and-pop Chinese restaurants you see on practically every other street corner. Those are the restaurants I'd advise you try to stay away from, unless, of course, you've got an iron stomach and don't mind living dangerously.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!